Welcome to Creative Disturbance. Audio Labs.
Rencontre avec.
Rencontre avec.
Meeting.
Meeting.
Anna Dimitri.
You are part of the Artist in Residence project FEED. FEED is an European Union co-funded program in which artists are in residence in the FET, that is Future Emerging Technologies Research Consortium. And the goal of FEED, which is Future Emerging Art and Technology, is to explore unconventional ways of thinking and creativity. So before we go into what your FEED project is, could you just remind us what is your field of artistic creation?
I trained as a fine artist. I actually trained in painting about 20 or more years ago. And since then, during that period and then moving on from that, I was fascinated in living things, in particularly in cells and then bacteria, which became my obsession, I think. I now work specifically as an artist using the tools and techniques of microbiology, using bacteria as a medium, but to make fine art objects and installations. So quite often I work with textiles, which are embedded with bacteria. I work with DNA, work with synthetic biology now, and I'm particularly fascinated in infectious diseases, the history of infectious diseases, and how they've affected society in a very multi-layered way, including kind of things like the strange anecdotes of the effects of disease.
For the FEED project, you had the choice among several FET scientific research consortia. So could you tell us which consortia you picked up?
I selected MRG Gramma project, which is, it means massive reverse genomics, and it's a project to understand how gene regulation works, or the Gramma behind gene regulation. And so to that end, they're working with bacteria and some of the consortium members, and they're also working with things like mouse T cells and mouse cells, single cell organisms, and fruit flies as well, in various ways. So what's fascinating about it is that it's still at a very early stage. It's similar to the work I've been doing about whole genome sequencing of bacteria, where I sequenced the entire genome of my Staphylococcus aureus and learned the process end to end. Because I'm trying to understand how these technologies will be embedded in society and what they'll mean for us. There's a perception that things like microbiology or some aspects of science are complete. There is actually a huge amount that we don't know. And since the advent of these new sequencing technologies, which stem out of the Human Genome Project, and it's really speeding up the ability of us to actually read, if you like, the instruction book for an organism. And about 2% of those instructions code for something called protein production, which is what makes the sort of the thing that is us, as far as we know. And the rest of the DNA is doing something to regulate it. So if you imagine this instruction book, we sort of have a vague understanding of 2% of it now. And the work of scientists such as the MRG Gramma researchers is to kind of unpack what the other 98% of that instruction book of that living thing, of a living thing, might be. Things like specifically to try and understand things like how the immune response works. And then, you know, you could potentially be able to tell genes not to be expressed or control the expression of genes, which would have very far-reaching impact on healthcare in the future.
We are at the very beginning of this project, so you just started the residencies. What are you expecting at this stage? What are your goals or expectation?
Something I always want to do with my projects is to build an extra bit of knowledge into my understanding of the media I'm working with, which I guess is in this case bacteria. I'm always looking for that next part of the story. So I was working a lot with clinical microbiology and pathogenic bacteria in the lab, and that led me to look into whole genome sequencing and work with those processes, and that led me to work at so that project was with University of Oxford and Public Health England, and that led me to work with University of California, Irvine, and look at synthetic biology and synthetic evolution there, which is adding another bit of that knowledge for me. And this project, again, it bolts on another bit of understanding for me. And I think as an artist, I'm quite happy to kind of go and meet the researchers and work in the lab and just ask really silly, I guess, silly questions. But I'm always told that they're not silly questions, because the scientists often comment that it forces them to try and explain things in ways that they never get to try, basically. They always have their own shared understanding. But when they're trying to explain it to me, sometimes it reveals for them gaps in their own knowledge or their failure to be able to understand, explain certain aspects of it. It's kind of finding this path between what's known, what's not known, and what we believe at the moment. That's very fascinating. So I'm hoping to get a better understanding of how gene regulation works.
Future, emerging art, and technology.
Could you tell me where you have already been, in which labs, and what is the next step?
I'm working at the Siegel Lab at the Weizmann Institute in Israel. The Amit Lab, led by Roe Amit, who's the lead on the whole MRG Grammar project, in Technion in Haifa, and at the Teichmann Lab at the Wellcome Sanger Institute. And I also hope to be learning, I'm going to learn about the bioinformatics side there, how they're studying it computationally, but I'm also going to be actually working hands-on with things like CRISPR and other lab experiments that they're doing. And what they're looking at in the Teichmann lab, rather than bacteria, they're looking at the other side of the story, which is the immune system.
The FED project, that is the research, scientific research project, are over a 3 to 4 year time frame, whereas the FEAT project, that is with the artist, are over a year time frame. So do you think that it should be better in an ideal world that the artist would be associated with a scientific project from the very beginning of a scientific project up to the end?
Yes, it definitely would be better to have the artist not appointed at the start of the project, but appointed prior to the project, so that the artist was also a member of the initial funding application, and that lasted throughout the project. The reason FEAT is done like this is because this is in a way it's a large scale pilot, but it's still a kind of pilot study. Well, we need to kind of produce evidence that it needs to go forward. We've already heard from a lot of the scientists that they're incredibly excited about it, and they would like to kind of take up the model that I was talking about, where they appoint the artist beforehand. But we need to introduce them to that idea. And I think by having artists now in this way, which was the only way that we were able to get it funded and put it together, we're giving scientists the confidence to engage artists at an earlier stage. I've already been, by the scientists I've been working with, I've already been suggested to be involved with other future projects because they're interested in that. So it's already happening.
Obviously, artists do not need to be into a laboratory or collaborating with a scientist to do art science work. artists can use data that is freely available everywhere, and if they have a knowledge, they can use this data without interacting one single second with a scientist. So could you explain your own practice and why you like to be in collaboration and in labs?
I think for me, the actual process of being hands-on with the materials is very, very important. And a lot of my materials, you do need a massive infrastructure to work with, because I work a lot with pathogens, pathogenic bacteria, and the sequencing tools that I need are also quite expensive to make that work. Of course, I think that work wouldn't have evolved if I hadn't been in those settings, so it's a sort of chicken and egg thing there. But with working with the scientists, what I love is the conversation. So I love working hands-on in the lab. You do a lot of quite boring processes when you're actually making the thing. That's where I get my ideas from, in the process of chatting.
I would like to come now to your aesthetics and the nature of works you are creating. And obviously, you create objects, and you like to create objects. And what is striking for me in all your work, or almost, is that you use craft, and more specifically what I would call feminine craft, like and techniques like embroidery, crochet, felting, combined with extremely cutting-edge science and technology of science. Can you explain and this choice of yours using this techniques and producing those objects that are dresses, necklaces, quilt, embroidery, and so on?
I think the original sort of ethos behind it, I was rather fascinated in Rajika Parker's book, where she The Subversive Stitch, where she talks about how at the time when men were studying the natural sciences and going off to try and work out the weight of the world and all these kinds of interesting things, that the highest level of achievement for a woman at that time in that same kind of society was a proficiency in white work embroidery, which was considered really the most refined thing that you could be doing. And you do these kind of microscopic stitches, and they would do it by candlelight, usually corseted as well, so they'd be hunched over by a candle doing these tiny stitches. And I thought it was very interesting, this idea that the woman was doing that and the men were kind of off doing their scientific research at the time. And I wanted to kind of take that idea and do science, I guess, through the metaphor of textile crafts. And there's a real link in how the two mediums kind of feel as well, that the time it takes to do an embroidery or something like that, and the time it takes to kind of, it's almost an embroidery in the DNA. These things are very comparable in their, I think, sort of the bioscience work that I do is craft as well. It feels like craft.
But is it also that embroidery or craft relates to everyone? I mean, everyone knows what this is about. And when you go into this science, it seems so far away from everybody understanding. It becomes more tangible, graspable by the audience.
And I love that. It does bring in completely different audiences than other forms of kind of bio art, I guess. Because I get a lot of older audiences coming to my work. And that's really interesting. Things like the MRSA quilt. The quilt They're attracted to the quilt, and then they ask questions. They ask questions. They'll participate in making quilt squares with me, or these craft techniques. That makes people want to come and join in. And I have these like workshops where the scientists will work with me, and members of the public will come as well. But we're all making together, and you get this thing like the side chats that I was talking about. We have these little casual chats that they would never. You wouldn't never dare to ask at a science festival of an important scientist, but when he's sitting down next to you making a quilt square, you feel perfectly happy to ask those questions. And so we get a lot more kind of sharing of knowledge. It's almost a kind of that part of it. There's a lot of different aspects to the work, I think, but that part of it is kind of almost a bit activist in its way of wanting to enable these dialogues between science or biomedicine or medical science and people that will be affected by it.
What is interesting for me in your work, in some of your work at least, is that you are using those objects from the past and linking with current technology or current knowledge and cutting-edge knowledge in the future. And I think that there is more. The fact that you are using those objects from the past or linking with this specific past than you say or than is told.
So the objects that I rework in some of my installations, where I use altered historical objects, again, they're part of the story. So if I'm trying to tell a story about contemporary tuberculosis, what I'm fascinated in is also where we came to get to this stage. The different medical treatments, the history of that. So I look back at these kind of hugely important periods in the history of the research, and that's what I'll use the objects from. So it's again that kind of truth to materials thing. The dress in the Romantic Disease show is a maternity dress of the Romantic period, when the Romantic poets were all rife with tuberculosis, and when TB became known as the Romantic disease, because people alluded to the idea that the tuberculosis might actually be influencing the creativity of the artists and the poets, and it became almost fashionable to have the disease in a way. So that dress was a maternity dress from that period, but also the importance of it being a maternity dress was that that during the sanatorium its kind of later stages, it was considered, I've got a lot of documents that I've collected that I repurposed into artworks as well, where it was considered to be like people with TB shouldn't procreate. So they would often have, sometimes without any form of consent, forced abortions. So it was the maternity dress was to link to that story.
So is this to bring some kind of relativity into this idea that today's medical technology and medical science is so much more advanced and potentially creating the perfect, flawless, everlasting human? Do you have any kind of somehow social and political agenda by linking those historical objects to current science, to current medical science?
I think with that work, it's always in my mind how bizarre it is that these paradigms in medical science are shifting all the time. But And how sometimes we go back to them, and how sometimes they are playing on us now. Looking at how these things have shifted, it makes you realise, over the centuries, it makes you realise that things are still shifting, and we're constantly... The whole genome sequencing stuff and the microbiome research is a case in point. We're at a stage now where people think that... You get into situations where people believe that everything is caused by a thing. So, you know, everything's down to your DNA, everything, the reasons why it was down to your DNA. Everything's down to the bacteria that live in your gut now. This is quite a popular view. And actually, it's a combination of all those things and the gene regulation and all those things. And we're so far away from comprehending what is really going on inside us that we haven't come that much further than those kind of attempts of the past, in a way. It's fascinating where we're going, but I want to think of it in context of we're still in somewhat dark ages.
You told me recently that you like to use things that you find in the lab to make your work, that it can be symbolic, metaphorical things, but it's also real things.
I'm often thinking about ways that I can take the stuff in the lab out of the lab, because I think I trained in fine art, and I guess that I have this sort of strong truth to materials idea, so I love to incorporate the actual objects that I'm working with in the lab, or the actual materials I'm working with in the lab. I'm less interested in objects of glassware and things, but the actual substances that I'm working with in the lab. And I spend a lot of time working out how to make sure that they're safe for the audience, because I love to show them in the most accessible settings, so I need to make a lot of my work safe. Recently, bizarrely, I've been working quite a lot with gut bacteria, and so we're working, the raw material of the artwork is fecal samples, and we spend a lot of time studying these samples that they've supplied and looking for different antibiotic resistances in them. So we plate them up and we grow the bacteria, and we grow them in interplay with different antibiotics, and we can explore that. And we can use chromogenic agar, colour changing agar, which grows different colours for different bacteria, and we can create patterns with the antibiotics in interplay with the bacteria grown on petri dishes, and we can grow that on silk. I've been doing a lot of work with Nicola Fawcett at Oxford on that, and growing it in silk. And I also did a collaboration with and it's still ongoing. I've been working a lot with scientists in the Healthcare Associated Infection Group at Leeds University in the UK, and they actually create the raw material to be used in human fecal transplants. So this is a way of curing an infection called Clostridium difficile, which is another hospital superbug. People are fascinated in this story, and we worked together to make an artwork that's on permanent display at Eden Project that actually contains a fecal transplant that we created in the lab using exactly the same techniques. So I'm not averse to getting hands-on with the work. We had to sterilise that, obviously. I say obviously. It would produce gas, and therefore my glass colon filled with a fecal transplant, which is encased in a carved object with textile intestines that are impregnated with different pigmented bacteria from the gut, would explode.
The FEED project is embedding artists, or including artists, within a research project to bring somehow an quote-unquote out-of-the-box thinking within the scientific, the science people. So do you think that it can impact on a reciprocal way your work, your aesthetic?
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, that would be my hope. That, I mean, it's always a process with art making, and you're always developing and adding new techniques and adding new ways of working. with the work I did at University of California, Irvine, I'd never made necklaces before. And it just seemed like the most appropriate thing to tell the story of their work, to tell how an engineered antibody is how it's made up, and explain kind of these concepts behind what they call the central dogma of biology. So initially, when I wanted to make the necklace of amino acids, I thought about glass beads filled with the powders, but that didn't really do what I wanted it to do. And then they were talking to me about how synthetic biology and what they were doing would lead to new polymers as well, might lead to new polymers being developed. And then I thought about using relatively new polymer clays that are available to artists to incorporate into the work. So it kind of that triggered that. Scientists approach me now and they bring things to me and want me to work with them on it. And when they bring those things, like, I really didn't know I was going to start working with gut bacteria and fecal samples. The scientists at Leeds University sort of kidnapped me for about 4 hours. They said they were going to show me their gut model. It was this room full of bubbling jars and tubes and gases and things. Actually, a full working bubbling model of the human gut. We started the project and working with the human fecal transplants as an artistic medium, but I never expected that would happen. And then there were all the health and safety complexities of allowing me to work with that as a non-microbiologist, although in a way I am a microbiologist, but a microbiologist self-taught, or not self-taught, but taught in a kind of journey way through it. I guess it's a kind of fascination or an obsession, and I think it relates to something I've written a lot about, which is this idea of the sublime in microbiology, or the bacterial sublime, and it's this feeling of awe and kind of wonder that you get, as well as a kind of terror at the same time. So it's all wrapped up in one. So I guess, I mean, in a way, the sublime is the greatest kind of aesthetic experience you can have. So I think the bacteria have that for me, and that I think they have it for the microbiologists as well, and I think they have it for the audience too, if they're open to it.
Des pastilles, ear à sucer pour l'oreille, candy.